And we're almost so pleased to have you here back on the show. A friend of ours who every once in a while stops by and we talk about movies, and he is David Desser. He's professor of cinema studies at University of Illinois. He's particularly interested in the cinemas of Asia, and we've talked about that before, but also other things. If you have questions about movies, you can call. One thing that we often do here on the program is to just encourage people to call in and tell us about the movies that they've been seeing lately. Maybe there's something that you have seen that you thought was really wonderful and you would like to recommend it. Perhaps there's a movie that you've seen you think is really awful and you'd like to say to folks, stay away from this, save your money. And other sorts of questions about movies and movie making, you can give us a call. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. That's the number. Well, thanks for being here once again.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
I thought maybe I might ask you about that movie that everybody's talking about, because you did say that you had seen it, and I must say, admit that I have, having had read a lot about it, I actually haven't seen the film, and that is Michael Moore's documentary Fahrenheit 9/11. Which is getting a lot of attention because of its subject matter. For people who are interested in the movie business, I guess it's also getting some attention because it's at the box office, it's doing very well. It's making a lot of money. For a documentary, that is, it's making a lot of money.
Well, it's making a lot of money for any movie except for a super-duper blockbuster.
Yeah. Well, has it now set a new record for the amount of money made by a documentary?
Oh, it set that record the first week.
Okay.
I mean, everything is relative. I'm sure over the years there have been films that have had higher attendance, though, by now. But after its first week, it certainly set the record for a number of screens. I mean, it was almost on 1,000 screens at the same time. So, yeah, it's well-established record and still going strong.
The thing I was interested in, there was an article that appeared in the New York Times on the 5th of July, I guess, and it was about the fact that, say, within recent years, a number of non-fiction films have actually done really quite well, respectively well, feature-length films done respectively well at the box office, like Fahrenheit 9/11, but also Super Size Me, the movie about the guy who spends a month eating at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. Winged Migration, which is a nature documentary. There was also one that was about the National Spelling Bee.
Spellbound,
which did very well. And some others, I mm-hmm. guess, going back all the way to Hoop Dreams, that did really well. And so the point of the article is, well, maybe are we now at a point here where, to quote the author of the piece here in the Times, where we have an increasing acceptance of documentaries by audiences as mass entertainment and by movie distributors as potential profit centers. And I guess I wonder, really? Do you think that that's true?
Well, it's apparently true. I had a couple of theories about that. One is, at some point, well, the first theory is the baby boom generation, which grew up both on television and film, and really, you know, it still wants to go to the movies. But there was a period, especially in the 80s, where Hollywood had abandoned anybody over, say, 12. So I think that the recognition that there's a baby boom out there, and you see it in the occasional movie, you know, the Diane Keaton, Jack Nicholson, whatever that was called off the top of my head, where she got, you know, the Oscar nominations all that. Yeah. It'll come to me later. But the occasional movie about older people, Clint Eastwood will star in a movie and Meryl Streep will star in a movie, Susan Sarandon. So one idea is that the baby boom generation, now past 50, is ready for entertainment that's a little bit different. Second of all, having grown up on television and having experienced the kind of intensive media that they were bombarded with, they're used to that kind of thing. Also remember, there was a time that the so-called baby boomers were also interested in politics and real life and social issues. And so there may be a touch of that, you know, with the aging baby boomers feeling a little bit of guilt. Let's get back into this fray, at least by going to the movies. There's some of that. I think there's a lot of different reasons that may be here. But also, I think marketing has a lot to do with it. You know, it's like if Fahrenheit 9/11 hadn't gotten the publicity it had, it probably wouldn't have done nearly as well. Now, of course, Michael Moore is a well-known commodity. But again, you really need, you know, two things you need is a lot of publicity or a lot of good word of mouth. So things like Winged Migration and Spellbound, Capturing the Freedmans is another good example. These were allowed to play. They got good word of mouth. They got a lot of press coverage. At least Capturing the Freedmans is a controversial subject. So if you get a little something extra, you can generate some publicity. So I think there's a kind of roller coaster effect for documentaries, but maybe in a couple of years it will be gone. Mm. So, you know, but in the meantime, there's no doubt that the documentaries. The other thing that my theory had been was that the audience or the kind of audience that once would have gone to foreign films shifted its allegiance to independent films. And may now be shifting its allegiance to documentary films, just as a kind of the next new thing, but also in good ways. And when I brought this up to the head of Sony Classics Pictures during the recent Ebert Fest here in town, he said that was true to some extent, but he thinks that there's getting to be room again for foreign films within this kind of continuum. But certainly non-mainstream movies are finding an audience for sure in ways that they haven't.
Yeah. That's interesting because in this article that I was talking about, they had a quote from the infamous Harvey Weinstein,
yeah,
who essentially said the same thing that you just said. In looking at some of the recent success of documentaries, he said, "It reminds me of the breakthrough with Sex, Lies, and Videotape for indie movies and years later with Cinema Paradiso all the way to Life is Beautiful for foreign language movies." He says, "There have been some moments in our film history where all of a sudden it has changed." So maybe now, yes, maybe no.
Change is temporary. And also with the box office of some of the summer blockbusters, it may be that there's room. I suppose the idea is that there's room for more than just the summer blockbuster or room for, you know, more than just the sheer entertainment. Although, you know, Fahrenheit 9/11 for some audience is pretty entertaining. For others, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
But remember, Michael Moore did have a big success with Bowling for Columbine.
Was that before Fahrenheit 9/11? Was Bowling for Columbine the biggest box office documentary?
Actually, oddly enough, the biggest I think was Supersize Me. So the records are going fast and furious.
Every
couple of weeks. But although I don't think there'll be another one like Fahrenheit 9/11. I mean that. It, you know, I believe it opened in 890 prints across the country. And you compare that to most documentaries, you'll be lucky if you have 200.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, maybe even 200 ever. So it's just a huge difference. I mean, there are many, many films, even American films, that I'd be lucky to get 900 or 1,000 screens.
Yeah. We have a caller here ready to go. And other people, if you want to talk about movies, this is the day to do it. Dave Desser is our guest. He's professor of cinema studies here at the University of Illinois. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Thinking about publicity, I've often had difficulty keeping up with the local movie theater, the art theater's showings, and now they have an email list that you can get on. So people within the driving distance of either the Lorraine Theater in Hoopston or Champaign-Urbana, if they want to get on the email list, it comes once a week with movie times and what's playing, and then there are links to the websites for films so you can find out whether it's something that might appeal to you if you haven't heard about it. If anybody would like to know, the email address to get on the list is with the owner. The email address is Greg, G-R-E-G, at Boardman's, capital B, O-A-R-D-M-A-N-S, capital T for theaters, and it's boardmanstheaters.com. And I find that very helpful. I just file them. Look at them, file them in my one of my mailboxes on my computer, and if I manage to miss one, then I can go back and see whether I want to see it, rent the movie eventually. But I see that the Little Rain Theater not only carries some of the things like Fahrenheit, but it also, at the moment, looks like it's got Spider-Man.
No, the Lorraine tends to go for the bigger commercial films. Because Greg Boardman boasts, as well he should, about the superiority of the sound system, especially at his Lorraine Theater. So he really would like to get people to see movies as a, you know, in the best, not only visual format, but sound format. You're right. Now, Boardman's does have the website, but I suppose the coming direct to you in the email is a more convenient way to keep up.
Well, it's a reminder.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Life gets busy. And I
agree
with you. I asked them why things were there only 1 week. They said it depends on how much play they get the first, how much attendance they get the first weekend. And if there really is a lot of attendance, then they'll try to keep it moving on longer. So,
to my knowledge, he's guaranteed for Fahrenheit 9-1-1 for 4 weeks.
Yeah, that's what I've heard as well.
Yeah. So I think he knew he had a winner there, so to speak.
Well, the Art Theater has a really nice sound system, it seems to me. I'm not a
it does.
Cinephile, but there
it
was
does.
One movie that we saw. Oh, it was about a young girl growing up in Africa. Her parents were from Germany.
No, I think that was Nowhere.
Nowhere in Africa.
Nowhere in Africa. Yeah. At the end, the lights go off, and you don't. And I think the credits are finished, maybe even. And you hear voices and laughing and singing, and it sounds like there are people in a group up near the front of the theater. It's actually sound from the film, but mm-hmm. It sounded as though people were really there.
No, he's done a real good job with the sound in the Art. There was a time. No offense to the previous owners, but there was a time I would only go to the Art film to see non-English language films because at least I could read the subtitles.
Yeah.
But I remember in British movies it was almost hopeless.
You needed subtitles for those.
But Greg Boardman's done a great job with both the Lorraine and the Art in terms of sound. I mean, there's not much you can do with the body of the Art. It's not the prettiest theater ever, but the seats are comfortable and the sound is real good. With the new revitalization of downtown Champaign, let me put in a plug also, since we do have a large listening area, we put in a plug for the Normal Theater in downtown Normal, not very far from Champaign-Urbana in Bloomington Normal. They do a very interesting job of programming. Now, they only tend to program, I believe, for the weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But they bring a nice range of films from classics to, I think they're also having Fahrenheit 9-1-1. But I'll also, besides plugging the Art Theater strongly, I'll also put in a plug for the Normal Theater in Bloomington Normal.
One of the things that Boardman points out is that in his movie theaters, you don't hear movies from next door.
Yes.
And I noticed that when I went out to one of the local multiplexes. We were watching something, and there was a quiet moment, and sure enough, the sound from some other movie came bouncing in, and it was really disruptive.
The other day I went to one of the local multiplexes, and it wasn't the sound from another movie. It was the sound from the rolling announcement in the lobby that I was hearing. They had an extra set of speakers turned on, and I kept thinking, that can't be the movie next door, and it wasn't. It was the announcement that you hear in the lobby. So I didn't get up to complain because it wasn't a very good movie, but that was getting a bit much. But I agree with you that the Art Theater is certainly a superior place to see films. But the Normal is a nice place too.
Well, thanks for the tip. Bye.
All right, thank you. And we'll go on here. Line number two. This is also someone in Urbana. Hello.
Yeah, this is in Urbana currently, but kind of a question about a place like Quincy. We got radical movies once in a while, like Brother, Where Art Thou, came for one showing, and we don't get anything else from that. Is there a place where you can find out what movies are out there and where they might be showing? And is there some reason that is there any way to get those kind of movies into a town like that?
There is a place to find out what movies are around in general.
Well, in terms of movies that aren't, I guess, Hollywood movies or whatever you want to call.
I don't know about that. There is, on the Internet Movie Database, there is a thing you can click on called Now Showing. And they have everything that's now showing, so you'd have to wade through a lot of movies that you never heard of. But certainly Now Showing would also have the foreign films, the independent films, the documentary films. There are probably different places. I would actually just do a Google and just say, you know, foreign films or independent films showing U.S. One of the ways that I find sometimes for Hindi movies is a website that's called Now Showing for Hindi Movies, and it'll click on your state and all that. So I think with a little... But certainly the Internet Movie Database Now Showing will do that.
Are there services where you can get DVDs of movies that are released out but not showing in more, you know, rural areas? Are there any places for renting movies by mail?
Yes, there are a number of such places.
For independent films and things?
Yes, a number of places actually specialize in that. I wish I could remember offhand, but again, I think a Google search. Yes, there's definitely places. Facets in Chicago. They used to do VHS rentals, so they made facets.org, F-A-C-E-T-S, facets.org will certainly be one place that you could try for DVDs. But there's at least two or three places that specialize in anything you want on DVD, and you can rent them for a long period of time. What's that company that's really doing very well that has DVDs? But there's definitely places that like foreign, you know, that do foreign films.
I suppose eventually we'll have them that we can download, I imagine. But
yes, that's very true. I'm just sorry, I just can't remember. There's a few places that do it by mail, or place that's got virtually everything, that and you pay just a monthly fee.
We didn't find Brother Where Art Thou to be that radical, but
yeah.
They did in that town, and we had one showing, and I was the only guy, and there was four women. It was very interesting. It was for one time slot only.
Well, the problem is
that's the farthest we get.
Well, the problem is that you can suggest to any local theater chain that they do more experimental or more non-mainstream programming, but then they can come around and say, look, we had Oh Brother Where Art Thou, and there was you and four women in the audience.
Yeah. Yep,
so it's you go to the normal theater and you see full houses. So it's really a matter of a community supporting somebody doing that. Now in Champaign-Urbana, the Savoy and the GKC will occasionally show what they call an art film. Sometimes it's a film that's shown already at the art theater, or right now, for instance, the GKC is showing a film I do recommend, Coffee and Cigarettes.
Okay.
And there's no publicity for that. There's no advertising for that. But there in the GKC's art theater is the very important Jim Jarmusch's Coffee and Cigarettes. So okay. Not a radical film, but certainly not a mainstream film. So I think it's up to community people such as yourself to go see these movies when they play in theaters.
Well, the kind of investment that this man must have made in the art theater is quite a bit, isn't it?
Yes, it's quite a bit. I agree, and it's very chancy.
And there's plenty of old theaters sitting open over there, but one, they're owned by the people that build the multiplexes, and then two, then you'd have to figure out how to
get them away and how to fix
them. Get money into them, enough to do it, yeah.
Well, Mr. Boardman is a more braver man than I, because I wouldn't think there's a lot of money to be made in exhibition with one or two screens. But if the kind of crowds that are going out now, keep supporting it, it may turn out to be long-lasting.
Well, that's certainly a good thing, and it's nice to be back in Urbana for the summer to hear it and see it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call.
What is that place?
I'm here looking. I just put foreign films into my web browser here on the computer that I have. And the thing is that it looks like there's a lot of places that will sell them, but I so far haven't come up with anything where we're doing what the listener was talking about, where you can rent them, essentially like rent them through the mail. They'll send them to you, but you can look at them. And
there are places. It just slipped my mind. Yeah. I just buy them. I just buy them. But there are definitely places that have a lot of foreign films by mail. Definitely.
All right. If somebody listening has a place like that they want to recommend.
I'm sure there are.
Then give us a call.
Please do.
well, then we will continue. Let's, let me see. I think we have someone calling from around Hoopston, and they'll be next on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Yes, I'd just like to say that Mr. Boardman is to be commended. He's spent a lot of money at the Lorraine, too, as well, and has upgraded it considerably, and the sound is wonderful. And I think that part of it is that he's from this area, and part of it is he's in the film industry and has the right connections, so he can get first run films because of that he probably couldn't in some of these markets otherwise. And two, while in my area, frankly, I wouldn't be interested in seeing a quote unquote propaganda film, be it left or right. I think that there is a market for that and offbeat films in the Champaign area, and it's good that the art is back open again for that type of market.
Okay.
Yes, you're right about Boardman's film industry connections. Maybe it gives him a little of the income, but I think being in the film industry and the crafts, he understands. You know, when you go to films in Los Angeles, they really look good and they really sound good because it's an industry town. And you never knew, you know, who's going to be in the audience there. And people spend a lot of money on these movies. And they spend a lot of money making them not only on the script and on the actors, but making them look good. And not only just on special effects. But it's no you know, coincidence that they give Oscars for best editing, best cinematography, best sound. These are very important parts of movies, but they're useless if you're going to go to a theater that the image is dark. You know, the film is not in focus. You can't barely hear it. The movie from next door is interfering. All these things, you know, really would rile up anybody in the industry. And the surprising thing is sometimes people will often sit still for it.
Could I say one more thing?
Sure.
Also, one thing that he's done is that he's had quote-unquote little local premieres at the Lorraine that have exhibited a lot of interest. For instance, when they had Apollo 11, whatever it was, whichever one, well, one of the gals that was one of the actresses in that movie, the Shell Heart girl, was from Hoopston. And so they kind of had a little ballyhoo about that. And then when the Pearl Harbor movie opened, well, he got Rudy Frasca and to come with another person. They had a little dogfight over Hempston, which, you know, drew a lot of spectators.
Yeah, and that's, you know, there was a time. If you go back and look at the old press kits of the Hollywood movies, they often suggest events for exhibitors to have. But the whole idea of a kind of, you know, mini premiere, all the big Hollywood movies still have premieres in New York or L.A., and they make a big deal about it, and the whole red carpet idea. So this is kind of an old-fashioned thing that he's bringing back, and I think it's a good idea. I know when they had Super Size Me, they said anyone who came to the art wearing their fast food uniform could get in free. And that's just a nice thing, you know, just to get a little publicity, a little bit of fun. You know, of course, you know, we go back some years of screenings for Rocky Horror Picture Show. People come in costumes. But, you know, why not add a little something extra to the movie-going experience beforehand or during? So I think he's really a smart guy trying to do this.
Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. I'm certainly struck that there are a lot of people who are really serious about movies and quality when it comes to making them and showing them. And whenever they get the opportunity, they complain about things like some of the people have complained about this morning. And you read it in Roger Ebert's column in the paper. People write him in. And I'm sure that on websites about movies, there's all kinds of stuff with people complaining about bad sound, bad image, rude fellow patrons, you know, stuff like that you mentioned and the caller mentioned about maybe you're watching a movie and there's some quiet point and in the theater next door, there's a volcano that's going off, you know. Mm-hmm. And also now I think we're starting to see more and more complaints just, I think, about advertising before the movie starts. All this kind of stuff. And I guess what I wonder is whether when you get to the point when the bulk of the film-going audience says, okay, that's it. We've had enough of this. We want you theater owners to do something about this, or else we'll just go to Blockbuster and we'll rent the movies and we'll watch them at our house.
Well, to a certain extent, that's already the case. I mean, despite the individual films that make hundreds of millions of dollars, there's more money in home video than there is in theatrical rentals. Mm-hmm. So, and that's been true for at least a decade and a half. For that matter, there's more money in home gaming than there is in the movies. So people are not only not going to the movies, but they're not even watching movies to that extent. But it really is a matter of complaining. And it's kind of circular to an extent. And that is, the fewer people go to theaters, the more theaters need to make up revenue. And so they do advertising and all that. Personally, I have no objections to that, even though I'm really tired of certain commercials. But I have no objections to that, especially if they will provide the running start time for the movies. Now, in Paris, for instance, they'll give you the time the show starts. They'll give you the time the actual film starts, because they will show 20 minutes of stuff beforehand.
Oh,
but they'll tell you when that's over. Now, of course, me, I like to go to movies. I don't care what they show, so there you are. French commercials and such like. So that I don't think is such a big deal, but certainly rude patrons and bad sound, or, you know, the film breaks. These are just, you know, and this is combined with, you know, HDTV and HDTV, you know, widescreen and, you know, DVDs, not only with better looking DVDs, but DVDs with, you know, 2.5 hours of extras. So the theatrical, in some ways, it's lucky that people go to the theaters at all. But theater owners should really do a little better job of caring. You know, some things you can't control, but other things that you can is, I think, theater managers should do a better job of caring.
All right. Let's talk with some more folks here. The next is in Urbana in line one. Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to ask the names again of the two movies that were mentioned. One was the documentary Winged Something.
Migration.
And then the other one, a caller mentioned, it was a story about Africa, some children in Africa.
Nowhere in Africa.
It's a wonderful movie. It's a German movie.
Okay, say the name of it again. Nowhere in Africa?
That's right.
Oh, Nowhere in Africa. No,
and I know that it's available. I just happened to be in the video store the other day, and I know that it's available for rental.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's just go on. And next, Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hi, Netflix. Mm-hmm.
Netflix, yes.
Thank you.
Someone else also, I was going to call up here. Somebody else called in and mentioned that too, Netflix. So that is a place that you can rent movies from?
Yeah, I talked to a couple who live out of town, but we're in Champaign-Urbana for Ebertfest, and we're there early along with me. And so you get to know people, and they said that because they live out of town and it's hard for them to get in, they use Netflix, and they watch a lot of movies now.
Right,
and
that's Netflix?
I think so.
Right. And yes, that's Netflix.com.
And I think it's about $21 a month, and you can... see as many movies as you can return to them. I think you can have as many as three at a time, maybe. They have to be out on DVD.
Yes, and there's no late fees, but you rent a few and then return them, and then you get some more.
Right, and the turnaround time, I understand, is very quick. My son got a subscription with a friend, and they watch movies together.
Yeah, no, I thanks, Netflix, right? Yeah.
The other thing is about Boardman's and Fahrenheit 9/11 is it may pay to check and see if the movie is sold out. Or whether you want to get, if it looks like it might be to reserve seats, you can actually reserve seats.
You can reserve seats on the Internet.
On the Internet. And it paid off the first weekend anyway.
Indeed, it did.
You had to have a reserve seat or
yes.
You didn't get in.
Yeah, that's correct.
So it may be also for something for weekends. I don't know. But another thing about Fahrenheit 9/11 was that we saw it the first night, and my husband and I were both very intrigued at a lot of the visual details. Whether or not he's got a point of view, definitely. But some of the visual details were things that it was interesting to see again. And just as examples, I got to see the banner on the aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
And it didn't look to me like something crew members could have made up. It was too sophisticated, with a flag graphic, and it definitely wasn't handmade. The other thing is that people talk about Bush reading to the class on September 11th, and there were some details. For instance, I didn't know that he already knew that one tower had been attacked. When I saw the image on TV of someone touching him and telling him. They were telling him about the second plane. And Newsweek and Roger Ebert talk about the president reading to the children. He's in the visuals, which was done by the teacher herself, I don't see him reading to the children. And it's up there on the screen for a long time. He's sitting there, just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a prop. There are small things like that. That whether or not you like the other things, I just found the visual stuff to be extremely interesting and done in a variety of ways. So visually, it was an interesting movie, I thought. Another documentary that I thought was very interesting and I learned a lot was The Fog of War.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes.
And just things I did not realize, and it was also very visually interesting.
Yes, I'd forgotten about that one. Also played at the Art. And the Art's going to be getting a few more documentaries. The one that looks interesting to me is, I haven't seen it yet, but it's called Control Room. the one that's about Al Jazeera. So that should be interesting. But you're right about Fog of War, too. Yeah, no, there's a lot of the director of that, Errol Morris, is a longtime documentary filmmaker. And not surprised. I think that's a superior film, say, to Fahrenheit 9/11. But, you know, just as a work of film, Morris is more... What's interesting about Fahrenheit 9/11 is the securing of what in the trade would be called raw footage, such as the things you talk about. I mean, Moore didn't shoot those things, right? The aircraft carrier in the classroom. So he's using footage from that other people, and he's putting it together and sometimes letting it speak for itself, just as it did to you with the classroom scene.
Mm-hmm. The chief archivist is a local person, by the way, for the Moore films.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I'll let you figure that one out yourself.
Okay.
All right.
Grew up two houses away from me. Take care.
Okay.
Bye.
We're talking this morning with David Desser. He's professor of cinema studies at University of Illinois and occasionally is on the program. We talk about movies. If you're interested in asking questions, making comments, talking about movies that you've seen, whatever, 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana. And toll-free 800-222-9455. Just real quick, you know, one of the things that obviously is obvious about Fahrenheit 9/11, in addition to having a particular point of view, is that Moore would like to influence the public debate. And I think he's come right out and said he'd be very happy if somehow he could have a role in in defeating President Bush in his reelection bid. And what I wonder is, can you think of other cases where there have been documentaries that have had an impact at that sort of level? Their very presence, the fact that people have seen them, has some sort of very dramatic outcome, not necessarily influencing a presidential election, but you know, something on that level.
That's hard to know. To a certain extent, you would say that the most famous documentaries of all time have had an impact in some way or another. Mm-hmm. I'm not comparing Moore, though some might, but you know, everyone talks about what's certainly acclaimed as the greatest documentary ever made, so-called, is The Triumph of the Will.
Oh,
right? But okay. What impact that actually had, except on people who said, wow, that's a great film, and gee, Hitler is pretty scary. You know, and then, of course, we made, you know, we being the U.S. And Great Britain made documentaries in response to or to compete with. And there's a lot of people who say some of the documentaries made in England during the Blitz were very important in terms of rallying support for the war effort. The two most famous is Fires Were Started and London Can Take It. And then, of course, you know, Frank Capra supervised the Why We Fight series. And, you know, these seem to be very educational. But it's hard to say, you know, how do you claim the impact or, you know, really prove the impact of a documentary on people, unless they say it, but they may not even, you know, it may not even be the case even if they say it. So Moore's willingness to enter the fray is typical, actually, of most documentarists. You know, take the very famous, say, Harlan County, USA, about the coal miners in, you know, West Virginia and the strike. I think that she would like to have stirred the public to support the coal miners and do something about the conditions and all that, and whether, you know, that probably had some impact, or something as simple as, you know, we think so. Errol Morris's Thin Blue Line, for instance, was about a guy who it was turned out was wrongly convicted of murder, and his film got him off. Now, that seems to be a pretty direct impact. So there are certain examples, you know, big and small, about documentaries. But the idea that someone wants to enter the fray and make an impact in the larger public is not new to documentary at all.
Let's talk with somebody else. Let's go to Savoy, line 3. Hello.
Hello. When I have trouble with the local theaters, especially Savoy, with flickering lights and bad sound and focus, whatever, I talk to the management, but nothing much happens. Do you know how to get a hold of the corporate office to say that these people have really gone into the dumper for the last 5-10 years?
The corporate office has a website, and one time we tried to contact them about something, and they never replied.
Okay. I've spent a lot of time on the Internet and didn't find any real addresses to...
We did find an address, a website, Goodrich Quality Theaters, is the Savoy's, you know, home, right? But the one time, I think I actually sent a letter. I have to recall with my wife. She may have sent an actual letter about something. We got no reply whatsoever, not even thank you for your letter. We'll look into it.
Okay.
So I just think that the manage, that's what I said before, it really is at the local. The managers here don't have control over the films they book. You know, how many theaters does Spider-Man go on is not their control. But how many, you know, flickering lights, starting on time, you know, things like that, just trying to care, doing a slightly better job is definitely in their control.
Yeah, well, I went to see Harry Potter, and it was out of focus. And I talked to the manager, and he came in and talked on the cell phone to the projectionist, and it was still out of focus. It's just frustrating.
It is. I agree with you, but...
Here, I'm just following up on what Dave said. I'm here on my computer. I did call up the site, Goodrich Quality Theaters, and there is a place here where it looks like you can send them an email for what it's worth. They want your name and address and all that kind of stuff, and the local theater, and then a space for comments. So I guess there as many lines as it's a tiny little box, so I don't know how much of a comment they would take. But I guess that is... she'll go to their website, and there's a place here where it says contact, and you click on that, and then there's a thing here that it says feedback, and you click on that, and there it looks like you could at least try and send
try.
Something.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give it a shot. Thank you.
It's worth doing.
All right, thank you. Let us continue, and we'll go next to Charleston, line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
About 40 years ago, I was in New York City as a very young man just out of college. And I attended a film, I think it was called How the West Was Won or something about the Wild Wild West. But that movie has been, of course, on TV repeatedly over the years. But what was interesting was that it was shown in a theater on Broadway that...
Cinerama.
Beg pardon?
Cinerama.
Cinerama, yeah. It was, I think, 70 millimeter or something
no,
like
it's
that.
No, it's three projectors.
Right.
Yeah.
An absolutely amazing experience that I don't think I've ever duplicated since, even with the high-tech kinds of theaters like you were just talking about. Are any of those theaters, Cinerama theaters, still in existence anywhere, say within a few hundred miles of Charleston, Illinois?
It's my understanding, at least as a few years ago, there was one in Dayton.
I think I remember reading about that, yeah.
So that's the best I can tell you. The when How the West Was Won is shown on TV, it's not even worth watching.
No. I mean, yeah. It was an incredible experience. I mean, it was
yeah.
The only thing I could say was similar to was the IMAX
yeah.
Kind of experience. You
yeah.
Know, real wide screen.
Yeah, IMAX is high. Cinerama is wide.
yeah, it was very wide. And
yeah.
And Lord knows the sound was absolutely incredible for that.
Yes,
for
the
that
sound. Yes,
period.
That's true too.
I don't know. Is there any thought about resurrecting Cinerama?
Cinerama is expensive.
I should think so.
Yeah. So I just don't think that 70 millimeters expensive enough, and so is IMAX. But except for a kind of museum screening, certainly I couldn't imagine, except as a kind of one-off, someone shooting a film in Cinerama. Now, I believe the Cinerama Theater in New York is still there.
Yeah.
And certainly the Cinerama Theater in Hollywood, which is called the Cinerama Dome, mm-hmm. is still there. But whether anyone would make a film that could be shown in its proper format in three or four theaters, I doubt. There were only a handful of films ever made in Cinerama.
Oh, I see.
And the first one was called This Is Cinerama.
I saw it
so,
in Chicago.
Oh, Dave saw it.
I did, and it was like a roller coaster ride
yeah.
and some. That's the only thing that I remember. Yeah.
Now, Cinerama was I don't know how... How the West Was Won, unfortunately, isn't that good a film.
No, it wasn't.
But so maybe, maybe IMAX is what we'll have to, or the next, the promise of, what is that stuff, the artificial reality in those game rooms with the artificial reality on the hoods there and all that. But I don't think Cinerama is likely to come back.
Great. Well, hey, thanks for your comments on
all
that.
All right. Thanks for the call. I remember my dad took me to the theater in Chicago to see that movie, How the West Was Won. And I guess the thing that I still sort of remember is I thought that the problem was that the three images, and you need three projectors
yes,
to show it.
Yes.
They didn't really line up all that well, and sometimes the seams
showed
really badly.
Yeah. Well, look at it this way. Do you want Cinerama? Do you want 3D?
Ooh. That stuff flies out of the screen.
Oh,
ooh, it's scary.
Well, I always, when I talk about the 50s attempts to compete with television, my favorite is neither Cinerama nor 3D, but Smell-O-Vision. So with that note, we'll take
ooh, ooh, the tingler.
The tingle-vision. Yeah, it's tingle.
All right, let's
but
go to Smell-O-Vision. Line one in Chicago. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Can you tell me the history of Stanley Kubrick? I know his first movie was Clockwork Orange, and his last was Eyes Wide Shut.
Not his first movie.
Stanley Kubrick began in the early 1950s as a low-budget independent filmmaker, and I believe you can get all of his films now, and that was a film called The Killer's Kiss, and that's about 53. And then he made a really, really, really wonderful film that I recommend to everyone called The Killing in 55. And then he went on to the Kirk Douglas,
Paths of Glory. It's about World War One.
And then Spartacus in certain ways. And then he really became super famous, with Lolita, in 1962. And then in 64 made what I think is his best film, and everyone loves it. Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. And then he made 2001 in 70mm, but not Cinerama. And then he made Clockwork Orange. So there's a lot of films before Clockwork Orange. And after Clockwork Orange, he became very meticulous. I believe a film called Barry Lyndon followed Clockwork Orange. And then Full Metal Jacket, which as the years go by is beginning to look better and better to me. I guess his last film would have been what? Because he didn't...
Eyes Wide Shut.
Eyes Wide Shut, yeah. Yeah, Eyes Wide Shut. And then he was preparing AI, this film that Spielberg finished. So that's, in a nutshell, there may be a Kubrick film somewhere that I've missed. But I definitely think that The Killing is a wonderful film. All of those, if there's any youngsters listening, those who think that Quentin Tarantino invented something special in Reservoir Dogs, please check out The Killing from 1955.
So you have a lot of movies.
There's a lot of Kubrick movies. Yeah. But Lolita and Dr. Strangelove are certainly, and 2001 are obviously the class before Clockwork Orange.
And what was his mentor, or who was his mentor?
Don't believe he had one. He really entered the film world, he was a kind of the Steven Spielberg of his time. He's from the Bronx, made independent films, and just got into... Oh, he was a photographer for Life magazine. So he actually did films on his own, but was a fairly well... Not Richard Avedon or anything, but he was a photographer who turned to film and then worked on films. He always really was an independent filmmaker. Until Strangelove, but certainly maybe not even Strangelove, until 2001, he never really made a big budget mainstream movie. Strangelove is a kind of offbeat movie if you go back and look at it, except for Peter Sellers, there's no real stars. Peter Sellers plays a few roles anyway to compensate for that. So he really came through with the independent world and not the Hollywood world.
Thank you.
All right, okay. Thank you. And let's see, we have about 5 minutes left here with Dave Dessert. We'll just keep on talking with people who are listening and go next to Indiana, line two. Hello.
Hello. I collect films mainly from, 20 Nights and Sound started up through about 55, 56. And, of course, most of them are black and white. And I was just wondering if you know of a group or a website or anything that would attract somebody like me, either for rental or purchase or what have you. For example, right now I'm trying to run down a copy of a film from, some filmographers say it's 41, others say 42, but it's Hell's a Poppin' with Olea Olson and Chick Johnson. And I know that there's a thing done on a TV show, Milton Berle, one time where they more or less did the film over, how they did it within the stricture of 1 hour, I don't know. But I know that's available, but I've not been able to find particular film.
Are you talking about video or film on film?
VHS.
Oh.
if at all possible, or DVD. A lot of things I collect now are going to DVD, thanks to Turner Classic Movies. But I'm not a, you know, I've got a lot of films anyway. I'm not interested in spending money on.
I would put my money on the fact that there are both, you know, discussion groups and websites for this kind of thing. I just don't know offhand, but I would guarantee that within 5 minutes on Google, you could find the kind of places that that both sell these old-time movies. And if you put in titles, you know, like obscure movies that you know you can, that you have, and just say DVD, something like that, you'll find within minutes. We were trying to find some kind of serials.
There's a whole...
Yeah, so yeah, I think those kind of websites...
just devote themselves just to serials.
Right. So I'm sure that there's a...
Well, I'm saying I popped in Hell's a Poppin' a number of times out and never get anything.
Yeah, but if you popped in one of the films that you already own that's hard to find, I bet you'll find it.
Yeah.
But because I thought you were going to say you collect films on film, but the DVD and the VHS, because a lot of those films are going to be hard to find, obviously, because, you know, who wants to?
I may be forced to do that. You know, it's something I've never seen, and I read someplace that, you know, sort of the epitome of slapstick humor on movies at the time, and... I've seen some of their other films, which I have, and I sure enjoy them. And
yeah, they're pretty obscure. Olsen and Johnson don't get that much play,
no,
I have to say.
That's true. And could you repeat the name of the outfit that does the rent? You were talking to an earlier...
Yeah, Netflix.
Net something, but...
Netflix.
The what now?
Netflix.
Flix, F-L-I-X?
Right.
That's right. Net.com. Okay. Netflix.com.
I'm over in Indiana, and it's bad enough with the signal noise ratio, but when the lightning strikes, they always seem to hit exactly when the front or the end of the word.
Okay, so Netflix.
That's helpful. Thanks a lot.
Well, sure thing. We'll try to get at least one more here. We'll go to line number 3, and that's caller in Urbana. Hello.
I just wanted to know, I read a quote by Michael Moore, where he said that the Passion of Christ had a much narrower audience than his Fahrenheit 9/11. I was curious if you had anything, if you knew anything that might support that. And then, and number two, have you heard anything about the right coming up with a response to Fahrenheit 9/11?
As for the latter, I did hear... I think they're going to do something like, Michael Moore is a big, fat, dumb liberal or something. They're really trying to...
I think they're putting it on websites.
Right? I don't know about a documentary per se, but I know certainly on websites. But I did read something about somebody coming up with something or other called Michael Moore is a big... something like that. As for the former, I don't know offhand... obviously, I think The Passion of Christ will gross a lot more money than his films. But I suspect that initially that both films were playing to fairly narrow audiences. That both of them would be the case.
With both movies also, you'd have to ask, every time a ticket is sold, how many people are going back and seeing the movie more than once? And I think with The Passion of Christ,
a lot of people
were seeing the movie more than once.
Right.
So
you
can't count tickets sold and line them up with.
There are certainly outfits in Hollywood and who track, you know, the kinds of viewers, average age and income and all that. But, you know, my instinct is to say, at least at the moment, that Moore's film isn't tracking a broad scope compared to The Passion of Christ. So, but I don't know offhand where I could, say that.
We're going to have to quit. Before we go, you got a couple video picks you want to give?
Just real quick, for those who are interested in older films, the newly released The Film Noir Classic Collection from Warner Brothers on DVD has a couple of real nice films. There's 5 of the films, but the ones that are in there that I really recommend are Out of the Past and The Asphalt Jungle.
Mm-hmm.
For new films, I'm going to say The Brazilian City of God, which was a lot of... And then my surprise video hit, for those who can stand a little bit of strong language in sexual situations, Bad or Badder Santa. Perhaps the funniest film, the raunchiest film I've seen in years, But if you're into that kind of humor, it's not anti-Christmas, let me just say that. It's surprisingly mainstream, but not in terms of language and sex, but for a little bit of risque humor, Bad Santa.
All right. Well, I thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome.
David Desser, professor of cinema studies here at University of Illinois.